Perhaps we need to be more careful when we talk about the roots of our democracy lying in that of the Athenian. And perhaps we need to be thankful that at least the line today between leaders and the led is clearly marked. We've seen that rhetoric developed alongside democracy. Or is it the other way around? Perhaps this is too much like the chicken and the egg question. But if our own political system, indeed society, owes so much to ancient democracy, what is the debt to ancient rhetoric, given how inextricably rhetoric and democracy are linked? Now, one obvious difference between rhetoric then and now is that in the classical period, there was an emphasis on performance. It's how you put yourself over. Now, the emphasis is on understanding and interpretation. In other words, it's not so much the content of the speech that persuades the people in classical Greece, but the performance of the speaker. But today, we can dissect the content of speeches. We can think about what people say, because we have experts to analyze these speeches for us and give us reports about them on talking head shows and things like that. And moreover, we have the time to do this. Remember, the Athenian assembly met for one day, dawn to dusk. In that time, the people heard a number of speeches on a variety of proposals for the first time. And then the people had to vote yes or no. Rushed, yes. Expert, no. At the same time, we're still aware today of rhetorical tricks, verbal and otherwise. Can politicians today, for example, truthfully say they know how hard it is to make ends meet when many of them are multimillionaires? Do politicians really want to kiss those horrible-looking babies? But we accept these sorts of things. We know they're part of the performance, and we even condone them then. That's why, for me anyway, it's refreshing when a politician speaks bluntly, rather than spouts out that sort of underwhelming diplomatic speak that we hear all the time. But perhaps the use of rhetoric today is another reason why those in the public eye, especially politicians, get compared to the great orators of the past, in particular Demosthenes. Because Demosthenes is regarded as ancient Greece's greatest orator, by the ancients as well as by modern scholars, I'm going to mention him a few times, even though we won't meet him in his own historical period until the later part of our course. It's fascinating, though, how he is invoked and evoked today. For example, in 2008, a former editor of the Times newspaper in the United Kingdom, William Rees-Mogg, called Senator Barack Obama the most inspirational presidential candidate since John F. Kennedy, and even a better speaker than Kennedy. Right, we might expect that type of comparison. But then in a Financial Times blog of the same year, Obama was compared to Demosthenes. Also in the United Kingdom, as John Prescott retired from being deputy leader of the Labour Party, another politician called him a cross between Ernie Bevin and Demosthenes. Mr. Bevin was a poorly educated man, but because of his trade union work and industrial relations, became a cabinet minister in the post-war governments of Winston Churchill and Clement Attlee. Perhaps another debt that modern rhetoric has to ancient, or rather modern orators have to the classical, is the understanding that even someone who might be a natural speaker must practice. Demosthenes fought a major speech impediment and then worked even harder to perfect his speaking techniques so he could rise to political power. When he was once asked what was necessary to give an effective speech, he said three things: rehearsal, rehearsal, rehearsal. He apparently never gave impromptu speeches, even when he was beseeched to do so in the assembly.